Oh, a classic track for an old man like me. That's true, from Spandau Ballet. And it's brought the time to 20 minutes past five. You're probably sitting there thinking, has Mr. Broccoli not turned up again? No, Mr. Broccoli is here. I'm delighted to say. And he came with a big smile and saying, sorry, I missed last week. Professor Tom Duckett. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
Nice to have you here.
You too.
And we're talking broccoli.
Indeed, yes.
Do you know, there are things you talk about on a drive time programme, and probably broccoli is not awfully high in the list of things, but of course, it's a superfood. Yes. You know, it's a very good food. It's very good and green. Yeah. But what we're talking about here is not the growing of it, it's the harvesting of it, because you and your very clever people have come up with some great ideas about how to harvest it without human intervention, in some senses.
That's right. Well, we're looking at certainly partly automating the process. So the challenge with broccoli harvesting is that it's quite challenging for people to determine when the crop is ready to harvest. So
it isn't a matter of just saying it's green.
There are some crops where they do what they call slaughter harvesting, which means you slaughter the entire crop at once. You harvest everything at once, and then it's a binary decision, yes or no, let's harvest the field. But with broccoli harvesting, they do selective harvesting. So what that means is they might need three or four successive passes through the field, because they only selectively pick the broccoli when the head has reached a certain size.
And is that because the supermarkets are driving the fact we want all our broccoli to pack like that, so it packs like that, so it's attractive to the consumer?
It is. They have quite a stringent size specification, and there are some efforts currently going on to genetically engineer the crop such that it has a very uniform size. But at the moment, we're quite away from that. So it is a non-uniform product. The moment, the way it's done is that you have a gang working in a field.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen them? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. They've seen us running across the field with our sensor and wondered what on earth we were doing. But yeah, there's typically seven people in one of these gangs. So one of them is to drive the tractor, and then the other six people are standing in front of the rig with big knives, and they have to manually inspect the crop, maybe move some leaves out the way, tell if it's ready, cut the crop, and then they chuck it onto the hopper, the conveyors that take the crop into a big box at the back. So what we're doing with this technology, we're doing a feasibility study to see if it's possible to use our smart 3D sensing techniques to work out when the crop is ready. And then if this project is successful, then if we can demonstrate that feasibility, we'll go on to make a full broccoli harvesting machine. If that works, then we are looking at basically taking that gang of seven people and reducing it to a gang of one person to drive the tractor.
Does that make you popular?
in terms of taking people's jobs away? Well, yeah. It's interesting. It depends who you ask. So first of all automation technology has short-term impacts in removing jobs that would otherwise be done by people, and that's nothing new. That's an age-old process. So, you know, if you
go back to the spinning jenny.
Absolutely, and the Luddites and so on. And probably, you know, probably less than 30 years ago, there were many people in this country who were employed as typists, and their job was to turn spoken word into printed text. Nowadays, we'd look at that thing. Why?
I remember giving dictation to a newsroom copy typist.
There you go. So in the short term, yes, it will change the nature of some of the jobs that are available. In the longer term, we believe it will lead to many high-tech jobs in the robotic industry. But yes, of course, all this kind of technologies have such impacts in the short term. They're disruptive. Mm.
Can this work in bad weather? One of the things, of course, is certainly in the south of Lincolnshire, when you've got leeks, particularly in the depths of winter, and sprouts particularly, it's horrible work.
Well, I was going to say, I've done some of these jobs myself, and it is quite, some of it's often back-breaking work. It's very physically demanding, and it is quite unpleasant to be outside at all hours. The technology we're looking at, if it works well, then we could even be looking at doing 24-hour harvesting.
So nighttime harvesting.
It could be possible, feasible to do it at nighttime as well as daytime, which, I mean, Now, depending on our environmental conditions, we don't yet know how inclement weather might affect the sensors, but we are looking at testing it both in UK and in Spain, because UK and Spain have complementary growing seasons. It's a summer crop here in the UK. In Spain, it's a winter crop.
relative winter crop for Spain.
Exactly, yes. It works out rather well, actually, because the seasons are exactly complementary. So as soon as it's too cold to grow broccoli here, it's cold enough to grow it there.
Fantastic.
Vice versa.
Now, you've come at it not from an agricultural point of view. I've just mentioned the big development that's happening at Holbeach, which is our agricultural bit. You've come at
absolutely,
it using 3D technology that you've developed.
That's correct. I mean, in our lab, Lincoln Centre for Autonomous Systems Research, we've been doing a lot of research on sensing technologies for mobile robots for many years.
Including Mark, isn't it? You can see on, it's on the web page at the moment, isn't it?
That's a robot that's been, it's a French robot called InMove, and one of our colleagues, John Murray, has been 3D printing this and adapting it here at Lincoln. But you might have seen our robot Linda.
Linda, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
so she's using 3D sensing to map her environment and develop a 3D understanding of the world around what the people are doing. And we do people tracking, for example. Well, actually, getting a 3D sensor to track people is not so different from getting one to track broccoli while you're on a moving platform. So, yeah. We've got some quite mature sensing technologies, and we're now finding that actually agriculture robotics could be an excellent domain to apply some of these technologies. But, we are actually working with the people at Holbeach. It's our colleague Simon Pearson, who works at National Centre for Food Manufacturing, who's got many contacts in this industry, who set this whole thing up for us. So, you know, it is a combination of techie geeks like me that do the fun 3D stuff, and then practical people like Simon that work at Holbeach, and they're now partners in the industry, both the farmers and so on that grow the crops, and also the industry partners that's going to be working on the broccoli cutting device for us as well.
I can see the advantage of cutting broccoli when it's at its best, because no matter how good the human intervention is, if the technology is such that it gets it at its optimum, that has to be good for absolutely everybody.
That's right. We're limited by the quality of the sensing available. There's no such thing as a perfect sensor, and there's no such thing as perfect conditions. But the good thing about robots and things is that they don't get tired, they don't take holidays,
and they can work at night.
They can work at night. So, yeah, we certainly, to the limits of the accuracy of the sensors, we can certainly make the algorithms as optimal as they can be. But taking into account the real world conditions, the terrain, the weather, there's probably no such thing as a perfect system, but if we can make it at least as good as the people do it, then that's a win-win.
Is this a collaborative project with other partners?
It certainly is. The project is funded by Innovate UK, which is the UK government's investment in, let's say, industry-oriented research in UK research institutes. So they're kind of the funding partner, but then in terms of actual partners in the project, then there's University of Lincoln. So it's a partnership between my lab and so we've got Keithy Kusumam, who's the research assistant who'll work on the project. We've got Greg Chonak and myself, and then it's also National Centre for Food Manufacturing, Simon Pearson at Lincoln. But then our main industry partner is a company called Fountains, that will be looking at making the equipment for actually cutting the broccoli in the field. And we've also got a sort of project advisory board with various people from the industry. So we've got the Brassica Growers Association on board. We've got some of the biggest growers in the county on board, to do the testing with us. So we've got quite a good team of people. Yeah.
And whilst we were talking earlier about the fact that you go from seven in the team down to one, you could be looking at upskilling people who would normally be out there with a machete chopping the heads off, to actually being the people who drive what would be quite a sophisticated bit of kit.
Absolutely, and certainly, we would hope that we as a society would look at the bigger picture. It's not just about replacing jobs, it's about enabling people to live happier and healthier lives, and as with all automation technology, we want in the end for people as a whole to be, well, healthier, wealthier and happier. So, that's certainly part of the picture. I'll say so. I mean, just to say, and also on the topic of the labour, I mean, when I was younger and I worked in some of the fields, I mean, most of the work was done by, say, people from a Lincolnshire heritage. You say, nowadays a lot of that work is done by migrant labour. We have a lot of workers come from different parts of Europe to work on the land. Will that same labour be available in another 20 years' time?
Who knows?
Who knows? It's an ageing population. There's certainly, the supply of human labour is limited, and so part of this is about getting robots and computers to do the things that they're good at, and enabling humans to do other things which are hopefully, you know, more relevant for us.
Great day to talk about innovative technology. £130 million investment was flagged up earlier today here in the university. Is this unique to what we're doing here? I mean, is anybody else doing, or are we pioneering this?
Well, we're absolutely pioneering. There have been some previous efforts to do this, and I think they had a go in the early 90s using vision, but I think they were getting sort of something like 85% success rate, which, well, for a commercial application, you need 99.5 at least. I think there's been some efforts to do it recently that we've discovered on the continent, but we are the first to do it with 3D information, which is, you know, an area where we can certainly lead on.
I love the words Lincoln and first. that always, you know, works for me, and probably works for Professor Mary, our boss.
Absolutely, yeah, fully agree. I mean, if we can do that, then I think the opportunities for us where we are, agricultural robotics could be a big one, and certainly as we've got researchers here in robotics, agriculture is the biggest industry in Lincolnshire. If we can help to take that forward, then it's a win-win.
Fantastic. Tom, thank you very much indeed for joining us, introducing broccoli and the wonderful word brassica. Isn't brassica a lovely word, you know?
It is, yes.
Which I assume it means the things that grow off a stalk. So it'll be...
cauliflower, I guess, as well.
Cauliflower, broccoli. Sprouts? Aren't they brassicas? There's bound to be a lot of people going on the internet saying, no, Andrew, you're completely wrong.
You'll get phone in any second to people telling you.
But the brassica has it for me. Now, here's a challenge. If you're listening at home, wherever you are, when you're out doing anything tonight, see how you can get the word brassica into a conversation. That's a challenge. Professor Tom Duckett, thank you very much indeed for joining us here on Siren 107.3 FM. So if you see a machine moving through the field and it's sort of quietly going about its business and there's only one person in charge, remember where that technology came from.